member of the Ethics Committee. Thank you.
I'm the manager of this office of the speaker. Thank you.
My name is Obi Batman, member of the Northern Cape Provincial Legislature, and also member of the Peace Committee.
My name is Kaboni Namchuan from the Mangaung Metro Municipality. I'm in the WIPARI Committee of Standing Rules and Orders.
Okay, good morning. My name is Lula Masulan. I'm from the Free State. I chair the Rules Committee. Thank you.
I come from the Free State, Thabo Mofutsanyana District Municipality. I am the speaker. My name is Mbotuma Maduma.
Good morning. My name is Manda Hadebe. I'm the council whip in the Free State, in Thabo Mofutsanyana District Municipality. Manda Hadebe.
Good morning. My name is Elizabeth Van Wyk. I'm from the Northern Cape. An official at the Northern Cape Provincial Legislature. I'm the capacity manager of organizational development, and I'm also the appointed registrar of the Northern Cape. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. My name is That's the protocol. Yeah, dealing with the ethics. Yeah. No, thanks. My name is Mofuze Dichakane. I'm from the Rich province of South Africa, which is Northwest. I'm from another rich area, Tarus, I'm not from Party District, Mosfetch. And I grew up in Tawu, the Diamond area. Thanks, and I can say that. In the Tawu.
Good morning. My name is Katrina Do. I'm from the Northern Cape. That is in South Africa, and Chief.
Passionately known as Junita by everyone, and I'm the Deputy Speaker of the Northern Cape Provincial Legislature and also the Chairperson of Ethics. The role that we are playing as the Ethics Committee, the crucial one is to make sure that we take care of the members' interests and make sure that members declare their interests on an annual basis. And then, yeah, and then also make sure that in collaboration with the AG's office, if they want a declaration to submit these for auditing, and also the public bank to go out in time for publication, please.
Good morning. I'm Martha Barker, better known as Barbara. I'm the initiate from the Satan Island in the Northern Cape, but also at Initiate Education. Thank you very much. And member of the Ethics Committee. Sorry, I'm member Victor.
My name is Ralph Mokshima. I'm the Integrity Commissioner for the Gauteng Provincial Legislature.
My name is Dolim Khosana. I'm serving Honorable Masondo. I'm the Secretary of Treasury.
There we are. No, oh. Yeah, let's say who you guys are. I can't hear you guys, no, I'm still there. And I'm not using a top squat voice. Okay, thank you very much. Friend.
Zila Mughlis, biggest shop name is Interest, Parliament.
This is also we have had so far three workshops. The initial workshop was to really engage the people from Gauteng, Swane, and other provincial legislature, Swane and Swane, in the main. Subsequently, we then moved provinces, all provinces of South Africa, into three. So we had that workshop, same workshop, and this is the third workshop. Just to note that. And on previous occasions, we have had the presiding officers of Parliament, either someone from the NCOP or someone from an assembly, opening the workshop for us. Unfortunately, this time around, we want to miss the person who opened the last workshop was Comrade who was the chairperson of the NCO. So we'll proceed therefore without that first introductory remarks and move straight to Moranamo, what chairperson is saying. Make some remarks. I will do the same, and that will follow up with a presentation from Zila Mohammed. After that presentation, we'll then have the Integrity Commission of the African Union also making remarks. We will then open up for discussion after all of these. And the reason really why I'm raising this is so that we can note the points that we are seeing on that we think are very, very important to pursue either in the form of question or in the form of on the heart later. We also do this same time, but also to provide the context. So I'm not discussing this thing. After that, we'll have tea. I hope you can see the street. And then, immediately after that, we'll then allow you to make short inputs as problems. In other words, we can't get a provincial input, but it doesn't stop you from the problem saying there's this important information that we'd like to convey to the forum. Through the input of this municipality and ask the person to speak almost immediately after the provincial input. Because that may enrich the process. That's supposed to take about 20 minutes. So it's 20 minutes times 3. Now, 20 minutes is a lot of time. It's almost an hour. It doesn't mean that we should utilize all the 20 minutes. You can speak less and be very brief. Now, when we say brief, we don't mean a lot of trends are new. There's a writer, there's a couple of this one writer. He wrote a letter to a fellow of his, this fellow was a well-known author. So he wrote to a friend of his, and he spent a letter by saying, please, forgive me for writing this long letter to you. If I had time, I would have written a short time. So asking you this honorable thing, summarize the key points and raise options. So it's not difficult, and I know it's very difficult to summarize, but we just talk and talk and so on. Is as the author was saying. Please forgive me for the longest to you. If I had time, I would try. then we'll summarize at the end. We'll also need your wisdom, right at the end. Just an indication of what you think the next step should be. Having gone through whatever we shall discuss all together, we'd like to have your wisdom. Some of you may have talked about these issues, maybe not. Those of you who have wisdom, you can share right at the end. So, saying to you, at that point, you can say to us, what do you think the next step? So thank you very much. Coach.
Thank you, Coach. The Coach doesn't have a mic, so I'm going to speak from here. Good morning, delegates, members of the Ethics Committee, the presidents, the minister, and the officials who are here. I also would like to welcome the media here because it's very important information is going to be passed on of this particular workshop. I hope the delegates arrived yesterday at this as well, and this morning you found your way to this parliament. We want to welcome you. I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome all the delegates from the Free State, Mulanga, Western Cape, Northern Cape, to this important workshop of the Joint Ethics Committee and Members of the Workshop. First, I'd like to acknowledge the presence of Dr. Nelson Zuma, the Commissioner, Kaukin Provincial Esther, who is joining us for the third time to these workshops. So, thank you for being here. I know that you have spent two other workshops with us. As the representatives of various ethics committees of our institutions, we are the custodians of the integrity of our institutions. It is our responsibility to guard the integrity of our institutions and ensure that public trust and confidence is maintained. I think most important thing that the public out there expects public events to be trusted and they put their trust in you when they vote for you or your party. Our democracy can only be strong if our people have faith in the democratic institutions. And all the institutions that you come from are all democratic institutions. And we want the public, wherever you come from, to have the faith and trust in you. The link between democracy and cults have been established since the beginning of democracy. For example, the code of conduct for the Athens city was in a cult. We will never bring disgrace on our city by an act of dishonesty of cowardice. We will fight for ideals and the fixed things of the sea, both alone and with men. We will revere and obey the city laws, and we will be our best to incite all villains and respect in those above us who are prone to annul them or set them anot. We will strive increasingly to quicken the public sense of civic duty. Thus, in all these ways, we will transmit this city, not only not less, but greater and more beautiful than it is transmitted to us. And saying is that when we get into a situation or position in our city, in our couples, in our parliaments, we need to enhance it. Make it a better institution by us coming and making our inputs from that. Now this is from the ancient city of Athens. That code of conduct was written many, many years ago. But now we are in a different cities and provinces in South Africa. And we can take a page from that. It's because we recognize that our institutions deserve legitimacy from our conduct that the committee has placed enormous emphasis on bringing together the different institutions so that we can jointly share our experiences in the arena. I think co-chair did make mention of that. That from time to time, we would like you to also share your experiences, your thoughts, your ideas, so that we can learn from one another. We, from the NCOP or the National Assembly, like co-chair, we don't know it all. We could learn something from the municipality that you come from or the province you come from. So these workshops are workshops where we could share and learn from one another and make ultimately South Africa a better place. We are looking forward to honest and broad exchange of views and ideas on how we can build vibrant ethics. Committees will foster strong ethical touches for elected representatives. Delegates, South Africa, the citizens of South Africa deserve that we all place ourselves first, ethically, and thereafter we can look at ordinary South Africans. It is not only by identifying the difficulties we may face in our implementation that we may avoid improper conduct. Research in the field of ethics suggests that individuals welcome guidance in situations which are difficult and unclear. It is our job of the Ethics Committee of Parliament, and I think the institution you come from, to give guidance. For those of you who will intend to breach the code, there must be sanctions. But in our experience, that the overwhelming majority want to do the right thing and ensure that they behave correctly and with provision. Our job as the Ethics Committee is to ensure that guidance required is afforded to those who want to behave ethically. We must also make sure that the compliance requirements, like the annual disclosures, take place. Delegates, that seems to be a major problem, where they don't take the disclosure figures, the sum. We believe that I will do it, I might do it after the deadline, I might do it on the day of deadline, but they don't take this very seriously, that members' interests, I know mine personally, I did it much before. As soon as I received the documentation, I did it because we've done it, put it aside, and submitted it. As you get closer, you find that other very important priorities in the structure you come from seem to take this, and then you forget that you have not submitted your members' interests in time. We must also make sure that the compliance requirements in implementing the work of the committee, we must build a climate of trust with all members of the committee. irrespective of political location, in advance the integrity of the institution. This is crucial to the work of the committee. Delegates, I think that is very important because as the co-chair asked you to introduce yourself, I didn't hear you ask you to introduce the party you come from, because that is not important. When you're working in a committee on the issue statement, the party one comes from is not important. What is important is the issues that you're going to debate on and how you take that forward. So, in this room, whichever political party you come from is not important. It's the committee you're serving in that is important. And that is the institution. So, party politics is put out. Live outside the room when you enter your committee. The committee in each area must identify the conduct which impacts on the reputation and of the institution and consider how negative conduct must be addressed. When a member of the legislature, the council, does something wrong, our good friends of the media will always say the counting problems, member of the counting legislature, or the member of the KZN legislature, and then say the name. So the name of your institution you come from, or the city you come from, you always mention first in the report. You remember, whenever you read something, you find that the institution also mentions that. And all the members of that institution, the general public are there, seem to face everybody the same time. So that is very important that the institution consider how negative conduct must be addressed. Delegates, finally, the only way in which the ethics framework can work is if we implement and ensure that there is effective compliance. We as members of the ethics committee, we need to set example and also expect our members to do the same by following our example. So these workshops that we are holding here is for us as members of the ethics committee first to sharpen our pencils. And thereafter, by setting the good example, we'll have our members of the institution that will come from also following those decisions. With those viewers, delegates, I want to say thank you, and I hope you have a fruitful workshop.
Thank you very much. Let me then proceed from where such a agenda is having to acknowledge all the important people who are here. The public representatives, comrades and friends. Welcome. That's the question that we need to ask is why are we and in this regard we'll definitely take a very brief look at the objectives and aims and conversation. Would rather have a situation where this discussion is really seen as an open issue to converse with one another, just like we did, and it become fruitful. Now, the aims of this workshop, just to summarize, we haven't done that strictly in the past. But I'm sure, given the fact that this is the third workshop, it's a bit older, convey some of the issues. The first thing is really to help us develop a common understanding of the code of conduct as a standard framework of reference on minimum ethical standards of behavior for all legally entities or public officials. So we seek this one understanding of the code of conduct. The second aim is to share experiences and exchange ideas on how to help maintain the public trust and confidence in public representatives and how to help protect the integrity of Parliament, the integrity of provincial legislators, and indeed the integrity of the municipal council. The third aim is to identify best practice, and not merely to copy what other people do. Identify best practice and adapt such best practice to our own specific conditions as provinces, as districts, and municipalities, and lastly, to help us craft a plan. The issue that I raised earlier on. We may not be able to do all of that in any kind of detail, but the idea of a plan should not be lost. To help craft a plan of what is to be done to keep in the work of ethics in the various areas where we operate. Beach, national parliament, official legislatures, metropolitan municipalities, districts, and various. So I also thank all participants for attending the session today. This workshop is the last in a series of three. All these sessions, we consider the views and ideas of all provincial legislators, schools, local and district councils. We hope that this forum creates an opportunity for all of us to discuss an important public issue, the promotion of ethics and integrity in our legislatures and similar institutions. South Africa has an elaborate integrity framework. This includes the code for the executives, the code for parliament, code for the different legislatures, as well as the code of conduct. These codes of conduct are important as they are set standards for behavior of elected public representatives. Code of conduct defines the values which guide our conduct. They provide clarity on acceptable and unacceptable conduct and set clear rules on how members should conduct their private business. However, the best goals can only be effective only if we ensure proper implementation of the rules. At this meeting, we hope to receive reports on the implementation of the disclosure of financial interest and related matters, councillors, members of the legislature, and indeed an indication of how Parliament is managed. And those who are charged with the implementation of the Code of Ethical Conduct, we need to assess the extent to which the ethical provisions in the various codes are adhered. We need to assess whether those who are found guilty of improper conduct face consequences. Crucial, our primary responsibility is to help create greater consciousness and awareness, to ensure that the members and councillors have a full understanding and appreciation of the requirements of the ethical codes and so that they comply as a consciousness. We must develop measures to prevent improper conduct and to entrench ethical decisions. As those responsible for ethics in our organizations, we must ensure that advice and assistance are available when required. We'll hear more from the later staff and as the punitive measures and sanctions are necessary, but they are not the ideal way to build ethical conduct. If we focus on punishment, we'll create an attitude of mere malicious compliance, instead of building a culture of ethics and good discipline. Our three countries to move beyond compliance was ethical decision making. I meant to encourage our colleagues to make the right decision because it is correct, not to not want to avoid assumptions. We are of the view that this Parliament Forum to provide a platform for us to share experiences on the extent to which goals are implemented in our various institutions to identify challenges and determine best practices. In this session, we expect that the input will allow us insight into the implementation of the process. We hope that discussions will lead us to best practice and to consider how we may address the conversation of our institutions. We should also consider how these discussions can be further broadened to cover those municipalities in our provinces who are not in attendance. So I think that the fact is identified. Who are those people that are supposed to be aware of? And they must find a way of assisting them. We should also consider whether an ethics forum is an idea that is whether an ethics forum can be established to examine the suggestions emanating from a meeting and discussions. Perhaps we can identify what specific training is required and what comments have to say. We need to share experience to determine how we can assist those who are experiencing difficulties. In Parliament, for example, the code of conduct has been in place for almost 19 years. And in all these years, we've had 100% disclosure. And we've published the register annually. The publication of the register is available for public citizens. So transparency is a key requirement for the effectiveness of the code. We have also instituted many measures to assist members to ensure compliance. The register is able to assess the company's intellectual property condition, the CPA's records, and on member directorships. In addition, we have decided to drive the booklet to assist members for the recording of fees. The register can let us have all these types of experiences where and when required, we will provide this advice to members. We have also been very strict in the distribution of the code. This is what the code is being investigated. We give recognition to the co-opters face-to-face campaign, which is to reinforce positive values. Let me just explain this point very quickly. That we have really gone out of our way to ensure that we are seen as a committee that is going out there to assist members, not to hunt them down, persecute them, and so on. We think there is much, much more to be achieved through that kind of engagement and interaction. In this new parliament, members are assisted with workshops and briefing to help them understand the provisions and requirements of the code. We also do ethical training for members for the multi-participating plans. Such as the training is not targeted only specific political parties across the board. And the committee also offers training to party conferences to this requirement. Because of the DA requires, for example, a specific caucus training that can be arranged through the committee. So that's our plan. The DA, the EFS, the ACDP, to ACAM, to AIC, and all the various political parties that are there. And when members have not disclosed that this code, the committee has fully implemented the requirements of the code. In the event of a complaint against the member is given the first right of reply to the allegations. After the member responds and there appears to be conflicting information, the register is required to conduct a preliminary investigation. up, conduct a hearing. When a claim is made, and it's reported to the ethics committee, then it's reported to the ethics committee. The committee, in turn, reports its findings to the House. To the House, either the National Assembly or the ethics committee. The entire process is very lengthy for comments. And for success to be attained, we require data collected to the ethics. A combination of support with consultants and factors. Therefore, every individual is responsible to help maintain and enhance mutual trust and take responsibility for their own actions. Members of the ethics committee or senior bodies are supposed to have the sensitivity to understand the full impact of any decision they may make. Because the work that we do in the ethics committee is implications for members, individuals, intending that it has implications for their families. So it's really a question of managing issues in a manner that is sensitive. An allegation that goes out there can do a lot of damage, not just to the individual concerned, but to family members, implications to the community, and so on. So when these committees are set up, they have a really great responsibility, and they carry a lot on their shoulders. So let us, through this having responsibility, because the ethics committee is really a very big responsibility, but they have responsibility. Let us take some responsibility, work together to help build a better country and a better quality of life for all our people. So I think we have to share the sharing of information, exchange of ideas, and good deliberations, hopefully. Some sense at the end that a plan beginning to take shape. We must need to remember that there must be a sense of strategy, a sense of a plan, and a sense that we understand what the challenges are, but also understand what the responses ought to be. And there must be also a sense that moving forward, there is some coherent action that we take in collaboration with all the other stakeholders, so that the work that we do become meaningful. Let me just add that the challenges we face are definitely not uniquely South African. Many governments, many institutions and so on have faced these challenges in the past, facing them now. But as you know, the question is not whether the challenge is, what responses are there. Are we coherent in responding to the issues that we have? What at stake is the quality of life of each citizen in that sense. Thank you very much. We will then proceed. Thank you very much. Then proceed to Albina. Please.
Good morning, Chairperson. Thank you, members, members of council, councillors, members of the provincial legislature, MECs, international. Welcome all to the session. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chairperson, for allowing me this input. I just briefly want to talk to the issues of the code of conduct for members of Parliament. I don't know if some of the members from the provincial legislatures may be aware, but Parliament in 2014 amended its code beyond financial disclosure and actually adopted a code of comprehensive code of ethical conduct. So it is much further components of the code, just by way of background information. Like many of the legislatures and the councils, the Joint Committee on Ethics and Members' Interest is mandated to monitor the work of the of its colleagues in Parliament. Now, this is quite an important thing because an ethics committee in an institution is really a committee object. You know, when members sit in the ethics committee, they sit in relation to their peers. clearly a peer review committee. And what it requires, and the reason it's an internal committee and not, you know, an external way, is that members understand the conditions of their particular profession and the nuances of that particular profession, and when they sit, like, better able to judge whether the conduct is correct or not. And as the chairperson said, that fundamentally, no matter what else happens, the core purpose of the committee's role is really to ensure the integrity of the institution itself. Because you always have to say that we, as the peers, you have to be sensitive. How would you feel if an unfair accusation is made against you from another party, etc.? So this is the importance of the peer kind of sensitivity. But at the same time, your fundamental task is really to protect the reputation of the institution and thereby, in the bigger picture, really the issues of the democracy at large. So, why do we have so many chairperson alluded to some of these issues? The first is, of course, when you're elected, it is a public trust, where you are handed public power to exercise. And when you exercise public power, you have to, as members of parliament, you will hold others accountable, but in your personal capacity, you have to be held accountable in your exercise of public power. Secondly, so this is what a code of conduct does. It helps you to determine what are the acceptable, the distinction between your personal interest and the public interest. So it helps define that line. So it also determines what is acceptable. Yes, you may have business. So in our system, mostly they say you may be a director in a company, you may have other financial interests, but it defines how you deal with conflict of interest, it defines what you may not do. So for example, in parliament, members may not do business with the state. So it defines what is acceptable behavior and it defines what is unacceptable behavior. It also helps members to conduct themselves in an appropriate manner. Of course, the world over, public representatives face a lot of scrutiny. And in the world of social media today, you can't expect the public scrutiny. So the thing is that even in, you know, the conduct that is required of you to uphold the law, to uphold the Constitution, those particular things, the values in the Constitution, are constantly detected. And you have to face the scrutiny of that test. Then, of course, a code of conduct gives you what is called a minimum standard of behavior. Not a maximum, a minimum. Is the person, what is at minimum expected of you? And then the other thing which is quite important is, as I said, members are allowed to have private business interests. But there is a caveat. You must do so with a public disclosure. If you have private business interests and you do so in secrecy, you will reduce every level of trust that the public has in your system. I'm going to go quickly to the disclosure requirements. I'm sure members of the Ethics Committee will know many of these, because I think that most legislatures and most municipalities have similar techniques. I'll give you a bit of a rationale why Parliament adopted these, and also to tell you firstly that the disclosure is not a disclosure of the assets and how much people own and how wealthy they are. That is not the purpose of the code. The purpose of the code is to define those interests which create a conflict of interest for a member or a councillor. So it is in the conduct of your personal business interests, those interests that are likely to cause you conflict of interest, and how the conflict of interest must be managed is dealt with in the code as well. So first of all, shared and financial interests. It's straightforward. If you have business interests or you have shared in the business, when you're sitting in a particular committee, in a forum, wherever you are, you're making deliberations about an issue, and if you're likely to financially benefit, it is better that you disclose and you recuse yourself. Simply because, look, there are some interests that we all have in common. So, for example, if you're a member of parliament and you're discussing an electricity debate, every person in South Africa has an issue on electricity and they have a personal interest. But it's not a personal interest that supersedes public interest. In other words, you're not personally benefiting from it financially. It is a general interest of a trivial nature. This is how we determine these things in the ethics domain. It's not a major interest. So you have to make a distinction between a trivial interest and a substantive interest. So those are some of the things that in ethics committees work. They would be required to apply their mind on. Then, there's a remunerated employment outside Parliament, and I'm sure for the legislative sector. There's something, you know, most people, for example, the Constitution doesn't permit members of Parliament and the provincial legislature actually from doing the, from actually getting a second employment with the state. So, for example, say, for example, you're a world expert on fisheries. I'm just making this up, so there's no person who's done this for the record. I'm just making it up as an example. Say you're a world expert on fisheries. And the Department of Agriculture comes to you and says, look, I want to hire you as a consultant. If as a member of Parliament or as a member of the provincial legislature, you take up that proposal in your personal capacity, it invalidates your membership in terms of the Constitution. Because you can't be paid twice from the state profit. The rules are quite clear. So just to be clear, that's exactly what it means. So there's one area of remunerated employees outside Parliament. So for example, in our system, political parties determine whether a member can get employment outside Parliament. Because party has different views. Something, you know, it's based on how much time, whether your time, and of course, time of a member is managed by that political party. Different parties have different rules. The other one, big thing one needs to manage when you're sitting in the ethics committee and advising members on remunerated employment, that their employment mustn't be a form of kind of such a lobbying, etc. So you can't work for firms who want to lobby, because lobbying for remuneration is not permitted in terms of the code. Then, consultancy, the world over, the mischief that happens when it happens is around consultancy, because a consultancy could be, I'm not saying it is always, there's genuine bona fide consultancy, and then there's so-called consultancy. You know, I think that when John Major was in power, a lot of the people who lost their seats during that scandal, you know, that money for Christian scandals, et cetera, et cetera. All of those things were hidden under the guise of consultancy. So in other words, I don't know if you recall, remember there was that Dodi Fayyad, his father, Fayyad, who owned Harris. He paid people money to ask questions in Parliament about his citizenship. But these members were employed as consultancy members. Actually, it wasn't that. It was just a backward way to actually get questions asked in Parliament. So consultancy is that's why in the Code of Conduct of Members of Parliament, the income around consultancy must be publicly declared. As you can see how much money people are getting for the consultancy. Then sponsorship to yourself must be publicly disclosed. The rules here also around all of these categories of public disclosure. When you receive these things, they must be disclosed publicly. They cannot, you can't determine, so a member can't determine, I don't want to publicly disclose. I must confidentially disclose this or that. The rules will define what is public and what is confidential. So a member must also be aware when you kind of implement the disclosure requirements that the rules define what is public and what is confidential, and the implementation by the committee must buy by the rules. Gift and hospitality, the same thing. There's a lot of gifts and hospitality. There's different things, right? There's gifts of a traditional nature. So if on your wedding anniversary, your partner buys you a car, that's a gift of a traditional nature. You need not disclose it. But, for example, if your brother-in-law buys you a helicopter and you're sitting on the defense committee looking at some kind of procurement for helicopters and he sits in the that particular company making presentations to Parliament, even though it's a gift of a family nature, it impacts on your role. I'm just using kind of made-up examples to tell you that there's no high and fast school. While it's a gift of a family nature and need not be disclosed, we don't say should not, we say need not be disclosed, because personal gifts your children will buy your present on your birthday. We also don't want to make the rules so onerous on members that it becomes impossible for them to comply. But what you need to say is that always when you advise members, advise them on the issue of determining what is the public interest and where you sit, how is the public interest in influenced by that particular disclosure or the particular receipt of gift, etc. And travel paper by an outside source, one needs to be careful, you know, sometimes service providers, etc., they like to invite particular individuals to go on a trip. And it's very useful to keep an eye on that stuff. because when first providers invite three or four people, you know, sometimes members innocently attend those trips and they find themselves in hot water because then those people are next bidding and procuring and all that, and you've gone there innocently and you've now been compromised with your reputation. You know, ultimately the most important thing for a member is the reputation and the public perception of their personal integrity. So those are things you need to also alert the members about the protection of the public of their personal integrity. Then the issue of benefits. And benefits we call in Parliament a catch-all category. In other words, it catches all the other things. And it may take specifically, if you don't know, if you receive something from Mahala, and you don't know where to put it there. There is nobody who gives anybody a big 10,000 rand or 3,000 rand just because they like your face. There is no such thing. There is no such thing. People will not give you a gift because they like you. They give you a gift because where you located, your role, and the work you do. So when you receive anything or a benefit or whatever, it may be in vague form. So the thing about folks is they guidelines. They can never absolutely determine every single circumstance. So as an ethics committee, this is the one difficult thing you have to deal with, is because you cannot make rules for every single circumstance, but sometimes there will be something that comes to the committee which is obviously wrong. You know, you can see that the conduct is improper and they have the improper benefits. Then you have to make the discretionary thing to say that this conduct is really improper and we need to look at how improper conduct is dealt with. Then there's the issue of land and property. And for council, that's a big issue because, as you know, you demarcate land for development. It's areas where people can get rich quickly. You know, so for example, if you're developing a new area and you're demarcating, and then councillors have to take knowledge of the area in development, and they're going by property. And many people say, oh no, there's no return time. But actually, sometimes when poor communities live in areas where there's development, they should benefit from the increase in property price, and their elected representatives go there and buy their property for a song, and those poor people don't benefit from the kind of accrual of the kind of their property. And it is a victim crime. So I think those kinds of things must be considered. And that's why, for example, in the code of conduct councillors, that councillors may not improperly use confidential information. And it really relates to those kinds of issues where you use confidential information that we see and transmit it so that you can get personal benefits. So for example, like the National College, when the minister decides that they're going to put up the price of cigarettes, or the one year they put it up loosely, the price of cigars. And, you know, those people who have inside information, they use it, they can buy 10,000 boxes of cigars and sell it. That's improper use, confidential public information. I don't think it happened, but I don't know, because they lock people up and there's huge, like, kind of issues around it. And what I'm saying is that there are instances when you can use confidential information improperly, and it's like inside information in this exchange. So those information is very powerful and can enrich people. And the thing is that these things cause harm. They cause harm. For example, you know, when the state puts up the price of something and somebody uses the inside information, the tax base is harm. So those are the things one needs to look at. Then pension. People often say to me, why don't I disclose my pension? I've worked for 20 years in government, now I come to parliament. Clearly, it's not your issue why I disclose my pension. But actually, pension income sometimes can come from the private sector. It's linked to commission. So if you receive a commission, you know, some in the private sector, even senior director, and you come, it happens a lot in the US, not so much here, but the same thing is likely to happen in the future. So if you, for example, are a senior director and you direct business towards the state or whatever, and you, like in the US, vice president or project vice president of the US, and then you get trainee, and then you're the head of Halliburton, and then the state gets a big contract with Halliburton, then your pension income increases through commission. So those are the things. I'm not saying to do anything improper, let me say that, but I mean, I'm just saying that those are the kinds of things which happen in their life. So as the ethics committee, you also need to find out what are our local circumstances. So when you're looking at your code, if you're reviewing it, you need to look at what is the local mischief. and I'm using the word mission because there are people, you know, there are two things I want to share. One of the people who are, they have the integrity and they make a mistake. Then there are people who willfully don't comply. Those people, and they are the small minority. Those people must be dealt with in terms of the rules of the road. It's the majority who don't comply which we need to focus on. I mean, who shouldn't make a mistake. Because, you know, the consequences of a mistake in national parliament are very serious. So what we have to say is that our job is to make sure that those 99% of the members who actually are not corrupt, etc., when they make a mistake, we need to assist them and do much more work, not in comply. And that's maybe 1% or whatever it may be, who want to willfully breach the code. So they will find a way to do it. If you don't, if you're not committed to actually meet these policies, you will always do it responsibly. And no code is going to stop you. And those people must be dealt with in accordance with the rules. So if you want to enter ethics center, the process is not punitive. It must be about building ethics center, building compliance, and making sure that people understand how can you access ethical values to build our society. And also, every single member here comes from a leadership position, so it is how through leadership we build ethics as well. So I think that's it. But in our code, the rules are quite clear. It defines what is confidential and what is public. So the interests of the spouse and permanent companions, minor children, are all confidential. And the reason for that is members are public representatives. What they do is public information. But the children and the spouses and members are not public representatives. They're not in the public domain. They have their right to privacy. But in events, you know, there are issues of people using their spouses, etc. So there must be disclosure. It's confidential. In the parliamentary committee, we take very seriously the managing of the confidential workforce. And we have very effective measures so that people know when they disclose confidentially that records can be very strict. Okay. Then, of course, there's income received from outside employment, directorship, partnership, and the value. So, whatever your income, so the other thing that must be in the confidential, not must be, but is a confidential section. If you're a director of a company, that information is public. How much you earn is confidential. So that is it. So that really covers the disclosure. I think it's very similar for the provinces and municipalities. The thing is, as I said, we had a very comprehensive ethical code in November last year, which was adopted in November last year, implemented in November last year. It has what is really the ethical values of representation. The first one, I really want, others are all self-explanatory, but the one selflessness I just want to explain. You know, people often say, why should I be selfless? It's nobody who's selfless. When we talk about selflessness in the public domain, we're talking about putting the public interest first. So in the public representative, it is your responsibility to put the public interest first. So that is really what selflessness means. It doesn't mean you're selfless in everything you do or whatever, that you have no self or no private life. But when you take decisions of the public power, when you're exercising your public power, you cannot benefit personally, and that's what selflessness really means in this context. I think most codes have a conflict of interest rules, depending on it, and I think that for those who don't have it, they really must try and strengthen it. And we really look at how different conflicts of interest are resolved. So it's about recusal, it's about inside information that I talk to, and it's about, I talk to a lot of those issues. Councils have got different requirements, but I think that some of it really depends. There's a lot of similarity as I talk to. The one thing is, I think it's everywhere. A member may not solicit the public representative, they're not solicited yet. If you go to the economy, because you spoke to all these other issues. What are the other requirements of the Code of Conduct for counselors? The issue of soliciting gifts is quite a serious thing, and I think it's really improper for any public representative to ask for this. Because the minute you do so, you compromise yourself, and I think that's one area also one needs to do a bit of education on. I don't know to what extent it happens, as I can say. I think that the councillors would be much more okay with all of the provisions for them. But I think I was just trying to make a distinction for the legislature and the council on the requirements. I'm not going to go through it. But in Parliament, in the House since November, any member is prohibited from having contact with any organ of the state. A member's spouse or children cannot obtain a contract to keep the member intervened. But for example, if a member is a member of the Ethics Committee and their spouse has been doing training for the Department of Education, not as a teacher, but as a training consultant for the last 10 years, I mean, there should be no conflict of interest because that person has been coming to business and continuing their private life. So it is only when there's a direct conflict of, you know, when a member is intervening to get their spouse to actually get the tender, etc. I talked to the Dobbins Remuneration and Employment for the State. The one thing I want to really talk about is the issue of the procedure. And the committee, one of the big things that everybody must do, they must really establish comprehensive procedure for the investigation of concerns. Because if you don't have that, you really become unstuck. You know, the procedure allows you to act consistently with every single member. It doesn't allow you, it doesn't, the chairperson of the ethics committee or the speaker of a council, etc., under pressure. Because if you have clear rules that this is the allegation, this is the process that we follow, it allows consistency in approach. So no matter who is involved, you have a consistent approach and here's a level of protection for all those who are there in issues where there's kind of a disparity between the person who's being, the attempt against whom the allegation is made versus the committee who may have, you know, who are different in levels of seniority. So I think that, that is part of ensuring trust in the committee. Because if you can only deal with members who are at the bench or junior counselors, but the senior people get away with it, you create much more resentment in your senior council. So I think it's quite crucial that procedures allow for equality in the way people are treated and fairness, substantive fairness. So those processes must really be adhered to. As the chairperson says, that we have a process, and it's very clearly defined in the booklet here, the yellow one. It's a very comprehensive process. We've done it because we have had many complaints and we have some serious issues that we've dealt with, and we then find a process of step-by-step basis. And we quite useful our, tell you on which page the procedure starts, so that when you have time to, you know, or maybe you can ask people or legal people to have a look at it, it's on page 19. You know, it doesn't mean that Parliament has done this with serious and actually the best way, but I think she's a very useful guide on how it could be dealt with.
I'm sure bear with us. There's just one more presentation to open up. For example, she was going to make a short presentation. They are from her chief. What I really, really could encourage participants to grab a cup of tea after the presentation and we talk as we bring our tea and so on. I want to ask you to come over and speak from here. So never achieve every work. That it seeks the support of myself as an Institute Commissioner when it deals with this
framework of ethics. I have subsequently been followed up by the people of Kenya, which is an adopted framework. Now, in the presentation that I'm going to give to you, which is very short, which is also in your final part, it follows the presentation of the it's very short because I've had a lot of time to talk so it is going to be very, very short. For those who are not the short terms of the first very different presentation, I apologize. Can you find the presentation? This is a very special project, but refer to our project that we have. In the presentation, basically, I deal with the privileges of the public, of the public provincial legislation. I deal with code of conduct and ethics for members. I deal with the function of my office and myself and in the legislation. And I also deal with parish development in the public provincial legislation in terms of reviewing the code of conduct and other developments. The Fabian Provincial Education has a privilege that ethics committee. I note that there's some of the privileges that the rules of ethics committee. Now this particular one is chaired by the deputy speaker. And this mandate centers really around two provisions. The first one is when the breach of privilege and contempt by members of the provincial education. The second one is when there's been a breach of the code. In cases of breach of privilege and contempt, the privilege is an ethics committee investigate and report the committee investigates and report on charges of breach of privilege and contempt against members. And this is dealt with in terms of the power that privileges they have. The rules on housing provincial legislation set out the procedure that must be followed in instances where a complaint relating to contempt has been lodged with the people of the state. The specific provisions of this section are the following. That upon receipt of the complaint in relation to contempt, the speaker will either deal with the matter or refer the matter to the privilege of the ethics committee. If the letter has been referred to the privilege of the ethics committee, the secretary of the decision must prepare a manner outlining the fact, the legal principles and practices which are relevant to that particular complaint. The committee investigates the complaint for the committee holds an inquiry depending on how the complaint was factored in the number of divergent views. In terms of the president that has to be presented. When the privilege and ethics committee has completed its investigation, it must table a report on its findings and recommendations for consideration by the House. Now, on the other hand, when it comes to breaching of the code of conduct and ethics, the privilege and ethics committee is supported by myself as our president. I investigate the case of breach of the code of conduct and I submit report and recommendation to the Privileges and Ethics Committee. The Privileges and Ethics Committee considers my report and tables the recommendation to the House. The House adopts the recommendations and sanctions as recommended by the committee. In general, the Code of Conduct and Ethics, as has been said, outlines the minimum ethical standards of behavior that South Africa is expected of elected representatives, including upholding propriety, integrity, and ethical values in their community. It serves as a code of good practice. It provides legislature with a set of values to guide the conduct of members in their capacity as public representatives. It seeks to regulate conflicts of interest. The code also is subscribe to minimum standards for disclosure and provide the establishment of the nature of the code of conduct for the members of the housing position legislature provide for the appointment of the disability commission. The speaker calls for the nominations and persons from the members of the public to fill the position of the disability commission. The requirements for the position of the IC are integrity, honesty, knowledge of law, public policy, politics, and socio-economic issues. It is important that the integrity commissioner is non-partisan and that he acts independently and impartially. The code of conduct states that the speaker, after consultation with leaders of the party represented in the legislation, shall appoint a person to be the executive commission. But the convention outing has been that a multi-party panel is set up to interview the nominated candidates and to commend the person to the seat. The speaker presents the appointment of the IC to the House for adoption by a two-thirds majority. The removal of the executive commission due to misconduct or abuse of power shall be subject to the same procedure. The executive commissioner is appointed for the 5-year legislative term. The executive commissioner may not remain in office for more than 2 legislative terms. The functions of the executive commissioner in the main are to promote and ensure the implementation of the code committee. The code of conduct for members, as has been said, have universal legislation. The principles whose primary aim is really to ensure the public trust and confidence in the legislation. The seventh function is to keep the legislature for members. In the process, we are now in the process of implementing electronic submission of this. This is to ensure that we increase the efficiency and the user friendliness for the members without compromising the confidentiality that must go with the members. The other function is to render advice to members to prevent the situation of reinforcement. And this is done by scrutinizing the register, building tools such as the experience tool or the commission for intellectual property, and also an instrument called Google's tool. I also conduct annual one-on-one consultation with individual members on the functions of the specific professional topic and play a supportive role to the members, as opposed to the controversy, as opposed to really a prosecutorial or policing function. The members are also counseled on the register as they submit their submission. The other function is to increase the capacity of the members by having sessions and education workshops for members. This involves in the main invitation of external stakeholders like academics and researchers in the area of ethics. A significant function of the Integrity Commission is to undertake investigation. Now, this investigation is to be started in the first initiated by myself on my own accord, or this investigation I begin on the receipt of the complaint. And this complaint must be a written complaint. It must be about members of the provincial legislation. A member or members of the provincial legislation. They must be from either a member of the Housing Provincial Legislature or the party, whoever believes that the code of conduct has been violated. My office registers each and every complaint, and the complaint must include supporting documents and evidence. have to determine whether the complaint is admissible or not. And admissibility of the complaint really depends on the fact that it must retain to a member of the institution. Oftentimes, members of the public will complain about matters that don't have relevance to the provincial evidence. But also the type of evidence must be of such a nature that I must be convinced that the possibility of the code having been breached is real. I must also seek, and I do seek, a response by a member who has been accused of violation of the code. If that member refuses to take or to respond, then that is referred to party chief. In either case, if there is no response, in 7 days, I have to start an investigation. If that is during the investigation, I may recommend to the Privileges and Ethics Committee to subpoena witnesses or any other person which is required in the investigation. I report together with the recommendations and sanctions to the committee, and as I the committee takes those proposed decisions to the House of Representatives. Another function of the Integrity Commission is to keep a register, as I said before. Section 56 of the Code of Conduct provides for the disclosure of the minutes. In terms of this function, members are required to submit their respective declarations of interest to my office within 10 days from the date of opening of the registration. Although not specified provided stipulated in the Code of Conduct, members are required to update their declarations of interest. At any time during the year, when this is a change. As the register said, the register is published annually since the first of housing information. I will skip all the coming presentations, this is so shared. I will skip those and they will adequately cover in the presentation. And we refer to both the public and confidential sections of the form as described. And I'll jump to a slide, I think that is slide number which shares some experience, shared experiences with Canada. And to really just say that the privileges and ethics committee for some time have been sharing experience with a number of countries. And one of those countries has been Canada. And late last year, the Commission undertook a visit to Canada. And a shared area between Houghton and Canada. In the sense that in Canada, all the commissioners and commissioners and the ethics commissioners are independent. They have their separate budget. And they deal purely with the methods of conflict interest. And in the next slide, I will share with you the review of the code of conduct. The committee is finalizing the review of the code, and the fundamental areas of this review are really prohibition against being intimidated, as we had addressed earlier, the independence of the Integrity Commissioner, the decision making, the administration and management of the Office of the Integrity Commissioner, the separate budget. That goes from the information of the speaker and directly to the session. And in the disclosure of the register, the inclusion of facts, which was originally not there, the question of safe conduct, that when members become members of the registration, they keep the safe conduct that they elected for, but when those conducts finish, they stop considering on the social media. The shareholders have also been reduced and the investors in the government. The review of the code has been shown by a number of areas which are listed there, and one of which has been on the 15th The one-on-one session that I've had with members, quite short, they started this one, and they agreed to cut this, but keep them reach our experience in the area of the patient. In the next slide, I deal with the founding entity of Asura, and I think that what the co-chair has referred to Asura and the national level, but the co-chair has also challenged in terms of us meeting and discussing what are the next steps following the workshops such as this one. In my view, and I think that's the difficulty, that's not in that light of the founding provision of Asura, is really that the question is really the question of capacity. And that capacity is challenging in the sense at many levels. At national level, I think culture is often what that should be. At provincial level, what you find is that experience and knowledge need to be shared. And I prefer the question of inviting people to ensure that members of the education have got the necessary experience. The second area of the capacity is the area of norms and standards. Now, the norms of standards are needed for the reasons that you mentioned before, and these areas are in the area of compliance, code of conduct, the investigation protocols, but also the area of personnel, whether one is looking at the personnel in the office of the chief, or one is looking at the registrar, or at the executive commissioner's office. In Gauteng, I think on the last month, the co-chair, I know that I've given a lot of time. On the last slide there, I referred to a proposed legislation in the Gauteng Office. And that is of the legislation is to name the Conflict of Interest Act. And such an act to take into consideration gaps in following areas. And the sentiment of the forum is that as well as land is included there. The ethical standards for leadership of provincial government agencies. A number of inequalities in our provinces that are not regulated by any provincial framework, that will take care of that. But also in the area of notice for registration, we think it's needed. And in the area of moderated member education, which is a national act, which in the province we see as the main gaps and areas that will be outreach. The other area of concern of culture is the area of expenditure. I think all of us have seen the problem that we're going to get into the previous part of the members of the project country. So we made a source of worry, the expenditure of analysis by elected members. So it is hopeful that this situation will also look at areas for that mission. I thank you very much, Commissioner.
There you are. Thank you very much. I hope you have written all the points. I'm very clear. What issues to raise? Let's just remind you. If you work better, if when you raise the issue, you start with the most important issue. That's when I catch you, because I said what the important thing. So do prioritize the issues. So raise them. The most important issues first. The least important issues everyone does not have some. But if all of us have important issues, I'm sure the decision will be very much interesting and thank you very much. Let's have so let's have a cup of tea and sit down. So we start as soon as possible. We now open up the discussion. Thank you very much. I think
Thank you.
Please close the door there. There is a different syndrome quite interesting in the house, in the house. I'm sure that has announced that the chapel will somewhere in front of the company, and that's the reason for this percent. So please be at the new percent. Thank you very much. Let's see. And then for one more comment, let's do it this way. That is a bit more efficient. Can I get the name of the blue one? So it's Susan.
Banji
Norwest. Yeah.
Yes,
Susan.
I know the shoes that are for you.
Hello, Susan. Yeah, how about you?
Honorable Gate.
No.
Gate.
Gate. Well, Gate 2. Yeah, number 2. Number 3. Yes,
sir. Right. Number 4.
Oh. Four is number 3. Number 4.
I just want to say that the Masondo is the Northern Provincial Church. Honestly, we have benchmarked this housing and actually what we are doing is just a result of customizing what we have copied from of them for the Israelite future, because they're treated as the best models. And also intending to visit Canada as a benchmark to study sometime next year, but we might be set by the elections. But our intention was to do that before the next financial year. And then on the presentation, the issue of the establishment of the Ethics Forum, I think the Northwest will support that proposal. I think it's a very progressive proposal. And at the level of the legislature, as Houghton has mentioned, it will also work. We can establish it through the speaker's forums. Because I know that each provincial legislature, the provincial speaker's forums, that are very much achieved. They can be produced at that level. Maybe the issue then, it might be the terms of reference, but with the advice of the commissioners that we have, how they can advise, because we must be clear. Remember, how thing is so big. Ours like a small size. Very few MPs, less than 30, Lutheran cases, so our cases might not be 100% when compared to Gauteng, KZN, and Eastern Cape, because we are very small legislatures, and I think even our municipalities are very small municipalities. But as part of the process of implementing what we are copied from Gauteng, we have reviewed our legislature rules, and in terms of the new rules we are seeing as legislature, we must have a panel of commissioners. Housing is one commissioner. Today we are proposing to have a panel of not more than three commissioners. And rather than having the ethics and integrity committee, we are saying the speaker must appoint an ad hoc committee that will work with that panel of the commissioners. And already advertisements have been out, but I was advised to reach the voice of the speaker that there will be a need for the advertisement. Because the view of honorable members when adopting the new rules was that that panel of not more than three, you must have at least a fair judge of somebody with a religious background to deal with, because once you talk of ethics, you cannot leave out the moral regeneration. So you need some sort of that kind of a, so you must have a mix, not only focus on the legal background, so that in a way it can assist to help our members. And when I think from our heart, listening to presentation as a guest from our side, maybe there are continuous workshops. But I know that there's one planned before the recess of this year. We also appeal the national to come and assist in facilitating that workshop. And I also want to propose that Amazon for at this level, it might be national, but the rest is of your own government. And at this level, you are more resourced than us. But as and when meetings like this, that is not proposal. Let us not come to national parliament. The committee must rotate provinces. Because if you hold workshops like this and rotate into other provinces, you are able to cover everybody. Then it won't be only the speakers of the districts and the provinces. We'll be able to engage with members and maybe some few delegations from the municipalities. I think it will give more, I don't know what to call it, but coverage and engagement to members. Because some of the things that you are referring to as part of the code of conduct. Sometimes I think members are not doing them deliberately. Remember, we come from different backgrounds. We come from different backgrounds. Sometimes you don't know. Sometimes it's not that you are ignorant. You are not aware. And if you're not aware, it's the most dangerous thing that can throw your life. So I think from this level, we must also empower us down there so that we do things correctly. In terms of members' declaration, in the North of provincial legislature, all members have declared their interests, all of them. There's information that is confidential, and the other thing I don't want, because it's the same as the LED as to get it and what I have said. So I don't want to present, to read, to do another presentation is the same, but I say to say all members have the test. But in terms of our declaration rule is that members of the public are allowed as and when, as long as they request the time during the working hours to access information that is for public interest, especially the confidential one. And the intention is that this commissioner will work with the other committee and we will report on the debates to Parliament. Currently, whilst we are busy with implementing the new rule, we have one person from staff members from the legal unit who is responsible for the register. The person is the advocate. She is located in the speaker's office. In the meantime, this is the process. The office of the speaker is in touch to the process is finally done. But we still go where the subcommittee of the rules committee, that is member interest. They work closely with the committee and the committee accounts to the speaker, to the deputy speaker, that is not checked by the deputy speaker, it's checked by another member of parliament, but it accounts to him. We are also of the view, like, okay, that the address on top of an act that will govern and close some gaps in regards to the disclosure and ethics in Parliament, but for now, we are still awaiting the standing committee on the legislative review to propose something to the Rules Committee, and it will be done before the next financial year. That's why I think I should pause rather than doing another presentation. Thank you very much.
But that's not the intention. Remember, I did ask you to summarize the strategy of the six months. I was not yet interrupting anyone. Please give your key points. So if I just stop you, we should have several listeners. Engage with the next.
Thanks, sir. Let me just really welcome the everything. Information book has had to tell us as to do our work diligently at the local level. So I would really believe that the aim is just to provide a clean government generally in the Republic. But over and above, this kind of objective of the clean government would really go to a extent of recommending to you Western perhaps engaging Salga with that particular kind of process to say it cannot just be an ad hoc committee. Rather it should really be a legislative committee of the council. Because we really find that for some councils they don't really feel it very much more necessary. They would really allow the speaker to meet the referee and the player within that particular ethical behavior and conduct of the councillors, per se. And to look upon that particular speaker of aiming policy, really look upon the very same press code that also adopted at the beginning of the term, the standing rules and orders, one of other issues, the code of conduct of councillors, the 16th Act. So these particular three kinds of important policy of the council would really reside within one single individual rather than really going within that particular objective of ensuring the clean governance in that particular kind of regard. So therefore, for us to legislate it as one of Section 29 of the council would really mean really business towards a clean governance in the Republic. But over and above, like my next speaker will just really said earlier on before me, because of the very less numbers of councillors to some municipalities within the district, it could really give another kind of effect. But over and above, that we have done with the MPAC, the Municipal Public Accounts Committee, would really see that it's located at the district level as a shared service in Tugiza municipalities. That falls within that jurisdiction of the district. So perhaps you would really go the same way. That could really be a shared service of the Rules and Ethics Committee to execute that particular kind of task. So it's very much important to see that at the councils, you found that there is a standing item to each and every council sitting, whereby if there could be any disclosure that interest that, on terms of that particular specific agenda, it gives the councillors a leeway also to engage if one councillor do have a certain kind of interest to the business of the council, therefore it could really be disclosed within the particular kind of a city. So it's very much more important. But the only one challenge, it would be the capacity in the municipalities. Yes, indeed, sir. The capacity in the municipalities. Yet, once you introduce ourselves, find that your committee, which has researchers, compared to the municipalities, for instance, that one would really remain a very critical kind of a challenge, not only to this particular committee, but to execute the work of the committee in general. So that would really be my input in that sense. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My insecurity on the presentation made by the Register, Honorable Mohammed, on code of conduct. So I just want to make an example of the situation that I was in. I'm a ward counselor. Then I successfully managed in my ward to assist some of the learners to go to Cuba and China to do medicine. One of the families invited me for a lunch. So I just want to check the question whether was it in violation of the code. They invited me for lunch and also they bought me a very nice expensive pen. So I just want to check whether was it the violation of the code. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
like the chairperson in Sondra. A chairperson, my name is shocked. I think I just want to get a certain fear. Even the problems in order, okay. The powers and privileges is being shared by the speaker. The ethics and code of conduct is being shared by the deputy speaker, which is me. So whether is it fine to run it like that? And my point was also the integration. One is power and privileges, the other one is code and ethics and code of conduct. I also had the issue of the establishment of the speakers, the ethics forum, but I think Mama Suri, the speaker from Northway, she addressed that one. Then we also in the province wanted to know the establishment of the three ethics forum, but I think the speaker from the municipality of Northway has already posed that question. The other one that I want to know, the integrity question. Is it a full-time position? Is it on ESO? Is it full-time? And whether it's on the establishment of campaign legislature. And whether for us, with for smaller ethics members, will it be advisable to have an investigating officer or someone with integrity to do our investigations on an ad hoc basis, or do we also see the need to have an integrity commissioner? And then our members' declarations. We don't have a problem, we've got fully functioned ethics committee with regular meetings, and for the past 3 years, consecutive 3 years, we've got 100% compliance with the submission of the declaration by the member. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I'm going to be very short. I'll start by focusing what is very important. Now, what I would say also is that our turnaround strategy must be key. Immediately after the investigation, if it's found that anything has happened, then we need to make a point that the compliance be the key, so that the person who has committed who has never complied with all these regulations that in there, he quickly charged. So that he must be able to understand that we are very scared with the regards. Number two, I also propose to say that let your budget be increased in a manner that when you do the retention of education about all these corners, you must be able to know that what we're going to do, we are going to do them within the person himself, because the key is within the person himself. That's how he's going to do things. When I say that, it should be like when you are behind the door, anyone of us who is behind the door, what he has done is himself. But now, when you're among people, what you do, you don't be 90% or 100% yourself, because of course you are in front of people. But when you are alone, then that becomes yourself. Now, if you are behind the door, we are able to implement correctly this conduct, you alone. It means when you are amongst people, then you be super. Now, what I'm saying is, the increase of the budget and moving around and educating people about this, we're making a proper education that everybody now must be able to relate itself on all these standards of our behavior. That's what I'm saying. Point number three, maybe that will be the last one. The proposal on point number three, the committee itself, the high committee here at parliament, must work very hard with the gap of the following. Let us do the rating also of these TBBs. You see, in the department down there, we call them the KPA. In here, we call them the KPDs, Key Performance Behavior. With regard, will be able to rate myself, or can be able to rate myself as well as I behave within the context of the compliance of the regulation. Because how we have extracted from the most important one, then they want to say for five, I'm 25, those are very tangible and very important. Within those, if I have misbehaved, I'm high, and the investigation has taken place, now I must be rated one way or another so that I can be well determined that not to wear, and I know myself,
After that, let's take this grass. You see, when it comes, you should show the red and green. You know that when it is red, it's gone up. But now you can see yourself there. That's with the mirror image of fighters or the mirror image of the grandma. And also, when I close, we can also, with this, we can create the calculator, the automated calculator. I can do that. The big after investigation has been received. We take all what's in the what's called report from the investigation. We throw it in the calculator. That will affect exactly how I think or how a member behaves. And then we might work together so I can see how that calculator is very beautiful. It's very beautiful. I can confirm to say that is very beautiful. I just like it with the car.
Some questions we can't necessarily get to questions.
This is not an much question for me. the first one is about the luncheon attempt. It's a very interesting question and it seems to be light-hearted. But actually, there's more to the question. In most cases, the luncheon of things is an innocent thing. But if you're getting, you know, there's things for 25,000. And so if a member says, I'm not saying you did that, but if a member says, for you to go to Cuba, I need a 25,000 yen pin, then it's a breach for its lobby. Mm-hmm. If you get a pin for 3,000 and you receive it, you must disclose it. Disclosure is the key. So those are the kind of variations, like to what extent have you expected it and received it. So when you do work for your constituency, it is required of you. There's no payment in return. When people offer their goodwill, you take it and you record it as a gift. Those are really the distinctions, and that's just the point I want you to make. I think others are really, I think they have some really good ideas that come in. For me, the issue is only, I'm not going to tackle the issue of the integrity commissioner, but I'm going to make a point about independent investigators. I think that the point for me really is about investigations in a kind of political environment. They are very difficult to do. And I think that outside people don't necessarily understand the environment. You need to be long in this kind of environment before you really understand the context of the work. And so that's the one thing. It's not like a police case where you go according to a particular law, etc., etc. And I think that, and there's also a lot of sensitivities in how you manage it. So a kind of private investigator whom you bring in on an ad hoc basis, you may get the right person, but there's a little bit of danger and you need to manage that. Comments on inclusion.
Yeah, also just a few points to make. I think Julia asked specifically about the integrity commission, whether it's a full-time job or not. No, it is not a full-time job. And I think the revision that I visited Mumalam and made a presentation, that was the point of discussion. And really, I think this is about capacity. And I like the idea, even the ideas of shared services. I think this is the route that we need to be going to. The other comment is on the turnaround time. I think this is very, very important in terms of investigations, in terms of cases that come up. When complaints are made, it is utmost important that we should accelerate the finalization of the problems through the investigation. Because when these men are safer, then they also defeat or expect legacy on the institution that is that we can speak. Thank you.
There's a point that we've raised about the issue. The British issues are out. It's not going to come up in the gym. In many countries, there's a recognition that religion in society espouses certain
good moral standards. So, for example, in our own country, we have many religions, not just Christianity. There's Christianity, there's Islam, there's Judaism, there's Hindu, and so on and so forth. I mean, there's African type localized religions and so on. When you craft your documents, you should stick to use what is there in society and to reinforce your efforts. Don't let it be not that politics is religion, or that the ethics committee must understand you a religious body. But what you should do is to identify the positive elements out there in society to reinforce the work that needs to be pushed back. The point of how that is done, is something that must be done quite carefully. But one person who spends a bit of time looking at this question of morality, sort of ethics and morality, which is amongst others, writers, I think, then, you know, what you mean in Vietnam and so on. So we should think carefully about how do you use the objective reality out there to reinforce the good work that needs to be something that we have to engage with as we move into the future. In other words, the question of ethics is not a mere technical matter. It's also a deeply political question. It has to do with work being done politically among the masses of the people. And the implications of wrong things that have been done in government, in political parties, by individuals and groups and so on, has implications to the elevation of society. In relation to our institutions, whether it be parliament, or the legislature, councils, and so on and so on. We must never take it for granted that what happens in these institutions spills over to society. And I don't want to make any specific example, but when people begin initiatives, in trains, all over the world talk about corruption and so on, must know your impact. This is the point where the government moves. It's not a matter of setting individuals on, it's a matter of just to do society and the support of political parties. So a big blunder that you make there leads to other problems. That's why every revolution has had to look at the question of ethics. Especially after national liberation struggle that we want. This is a very, very important we're not looking at it like that in our documents, but clearly there are a lot of political people who should know that this is not just a Trump pastime or an attempt to plaster over problems that are there. Firstly, to acknowledge that these challenges are here. First, and secondly, to say the responses that we provide must be meaningful. They are really meant genuinely to address the problems that are there. And that if these issues are not addressed, they have serious implications. Maybe I should just end this comment by saying that when people criticize you and swear at you and insult you and so on as a political party, you must know there's a bit of time. And they just talk to you. When they stop engaging you all together, when they don't come to your meetings,
You must know deep South Africa. So we do need to bring it up to him because we are all political issues. So I had around and so on the first night. But this is, if there's a matter that is deeply political, it is this question. And sometimes what people do, we don't make these comments. We don't have a very good sense of how things work in society. So for instance, we think that if there's corruption, say, in one municipality, we think that as long as our political party is not mentioned, we are not affected. That's not how things work. In practice, what happens is that when the problem is raised in relation to a municipality, deep suspicions and problems develop around the institution declared. If the office is Manga Hu, people will say, oh, the politicians, or the administration. Well, that's a question of politics. The question of the administration is where people who work in that municipality, not just the city manager, the CFO, the others who are there and so on, people say, you can't trust. So it affects the whole institution. And that's why it's very important to look at, to understand what is that are within So it's not just a question of individuals. It's a question of the institution. It's a question of the masses of our people. And this thing is, we said over and over again, but very important to discuss with people. The masses are never stupid. Those of us who were involved in the struggles in the 80s, in the earlier on, in the earlier period of the 70s, 60s, 50s, we know the saying that the masses are never ever wrong. The same concept as the customer is, the customer. They say the customer is never ever wrong. And there's no in between about it. If the customer is a problem, the problem needs to be addressed. And if the masses of the people are beginning to rumble and raise all sorts of questions and so on, those issues must be addressed. Because the masses are never ever wrong. And we can cite many examples. In the Kramba, the masses decided to go to the right wingers against the rest of the forces. The masses are arbiter, the final arbiter. So that kind of understanding is very, 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 very important. Okay, let's have more comments. But please know that we need to still get your reports. That's because for you, that will put promises on some of these issues. That to say, what are the few things that they're doing and so on, you'll come back to it. But let's see the just one round of questions. So for example, just give us your name again.
Okay, so it's a conversation from Don Tala, I said it's a conversation to the Northern Ocean. Actually, mine was just to...
No, that's not what your name is.
With the chairperson around, we have to get into what the chairperson is going to do it now before it's set up.
Very briefly, though,
very briefly.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I'll just take 30 seconds. What I want to find out is that, yes, correctly, I'm saying masters will never be wrong and so forth. But what I'm saying is, or what comes to my mind is that, what perhaps if there are very, very, very good instigators for the masses, and we find out masses somewhere else, they are not all of them, not so very understanding the issues of the governance or whatever. But now, the instigator tell the other story, and they do what called masses tends to believe. What about that one then? It's something I wanted to find out. So, Mr.
President. Yeah. There is a reason for me, and it's a good question. But it's not that answer with me. But even the people use in community to happen for the past, they use grievances that we have stated in the law. They use that to try and then produce a municipality. The truth is that they know how to be talking about it. You must deal with the situation in spite of as a municipality. You can't say, no, it's not true that they have the problem. You see the point I'm making. In spite of, you need to engage in strategies that are meaningful. In spite of objective and subjective realities. You see, the thing that we can't come up with an argument that says, and this is the thing that I'm going to say, we can't come up with an argument that says, but what about everyone? How much is it? They don't know. The last thing is, masses don't know. It's a that kind of approach, if you get into trouble. You see, some people can argue, no, the customer is never ever right all the time. No. Something wrong with this customer. Let me give an example. When I was in your country, I went to one service center, revenue center, and I got a report there that in fact one of the people who work for the municipality council had an argument with one of the for my account, one of the customers. And this chap said, no problem, sir, with demand. I'll show you who I am. So I asked, got out of the building. And this customer went out. And then they fought in the street. See, that was doing a kind of thing. By the time that you went to the extent of fighting with the customer, suggest that I've heard the people that use that strong word. That type of an employee, you know, is not suitable to employ anywhere where there are people. You are doing good. So, customer friends, a lot of our guys are entering the castle. You must find a way also to fill out the form. There's no two ways about it. But can't have people who have to cut and fight each other for the purpose of the family. Yeah, well, there's no two ways about it. Okay. So, yes,
Murray. Yeah, I think my comment is very clear in terms of the presentation that was made here today. We know the challenge that we are always having, especially amongst our community, which is the question of asking of the social distance. But I think maybe the question of the community not to know what is expected of them, and also for the local councillors and the local not to communicate or to reach that particular gap. I think that may also be an issue, but my recommendation is to say that I think that would be of most importance for us into the district of Eden, what is coming up with an approach of Eden, the structure that shall be recommended by the local municipalities, because there is this thing that says whenever maybe this question of sense of sharing the federation with local municipalities that we can some of them found this, we want to address a big brother to them into the particular locality. Now I just want to check on whether how can we be able to assist these students particular also, because I think this question of the people living in local societies is kind of largely corrupt. I think some of them, the solution that they must say, councillors could not interfere into this processes of change supplies and all the things, but not forgetting that where the problems lie, especially among the officials of utilizing that particular systems of using people using the public image, some more on the official side. Now what we just have to check into this integrity committee on the kind of the officials or kind of the people who can maybe be considered into a particular structure. The officials or the politicians or who I understand you see the speaker may appoint now to appoint this particular officials to the structure so that they should be more effective to the community. Because I think this is of most important, the question of how and who are these particular peoples and how are they going to assist the community so that the integrity of the institutions should be maintained.
No, thank you, Chairperson. I think this is a very fruitful workshop that we are experiencing today. But as I'm coming from a rural area, Chairperson, you understand that there is a whole city. And all of you, two co-chairpersons, and Madam Singh, yeah. You spoke about public trust. You spoke
about
Mohammed, Madam Mohammed. Okay, I got maybe Mishima. Yeah. You spoke about public trust. And why I'm saying that we are living in a very traditional land, which is a communal land. And we are saying public must have trust to the Kashira Council and here also. But at some stage, yes, the Jokosi are there, some of them, not all of them, some of them are the stumbling blocks for a particular councillor or a particular municipality to give services to these people. Then you understand that people will lose trust to a mayor or a councillor or a particular municipality or that institution. Precisely because of the particular king or host. Now people will lose trust. Then they will be coming to the president and be coming to the minister of culture and the MC or local government, telling them that no, that mayor is giving me a problem, that councillor is giving me a policy, that councillor is giving me a problem. Not understanding the real issues. When they are sitting here, that is almost not strong to the person. I think it will be much key also to sit under one roof with this policy. They must understand this separation of powers between local government and the affairs as traditional leaders in a particular issue. So that there must be a clear distinction between the two institutions. Because you spoke about public trust, obviously it's automatic that people will lose trust in the universal government. You are not giving them land, the host will say, no, this land belongs to me, it's not for the municipality. And they are also going extra miles and taking even that one that the municipality is even attached to it, the host will claim that particular land. And people will lose confidence in you as a municipality. And the other one, it was said, as a municipality, really as or as a council, I made that civic duty that I must perform. How can I perform that civic duty? Because I mean, there is a team this side and there is a leader this side. Now, you can't perform your civic duties because there's a conflict of interest, maybe your coach is an interest in a particular function. Now, you can't, as a leader, sign a service level agreement with a particular a company or a service provider. Because Khosi will say, no, I need, as a Khosi, I need 5% or I need 10% of the rats or all those kind of things. That is the kind of thing that we are experiencing in our area. Now you must make sure that sometimes you bring Khosi at one room and talk and speak about all these things so that you have a common approach and a common understanding, and there should be synergy among the two entities. Thank you, Dennis.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, mine is just a clarification. Today, the commissioner, is he the final person for the findings or recommendation of the ethics committee? Just to get the clarity.
I think a very important point when we do our final report, which I'm sure you'll summarize at the end. I think there's some very good ideas from the report, but we'll pull that together in the report. Just on the issue of officials, and I think it's an important point to raise. So the Act talks about the code of conduct for elected representatives and for officials. And sometimes, in our case, we have a code of conduct and we have disclosure for parliamentary officials. But sometimes there's a disparity in the requirements. So, for example, my office does the disclosure for parliamentary employees, but the code, like the public service for officials, is confidential. You know, and I think that there needs to be a move to a public disclosure for the officials' disclosure. I think we're working on a, I didn't have much time this year because it has been a very busy year. So from our point of view, what we're doing is we're going to be working with an overall integrity framework to build integrity within the official level at the legislative level. Because I think the public service is quite advanced, but I think at the level of legislatures and municipalities, etc., there needs to be some work done. I know it's a bit off course for the committee, but just to say that there needs to be that. I think it would be very useful. Some time ago, there was a little bit of a talk, but then there wasn't enough resources. For those people who already work in the ethics sector, for all of us as officials who serve, it would be very useful if we could set up maybe a quarterly or three-monthly meeting for us to share experiences, because I think there's different levels and different kinds of experience, and I think if we all put that together, we could come up with some ideas to present to a broad forum, etc., from a kind of administrative work point of view, from the people who are doing this kind of work on an ongoing basis. So, Chairperson, that's my other thing. I'm not going to talk to the political issues. I think that's better talk to, and the Integrity Commission will talk to these issues.
There's maybe one direct question, and that is the commission the final person for the recommendation? I think that's the question. In my presentation, I did outline the process of the investigation and the process of having it complete. Now, the reason why the Integrity Commission in part to be the right way to go is that the Integrity Commissioner needs to be impartial, needs to be independent. And so, if you then assume that when he investigates it, he can take both sides in terms of partisanship and in terms of allegiance. By having said that, when the Integrity Commissioner investigates and reports, he only reports and recommends to the committee, the ethics committee, the truth is the ethics committee. He recommends, he has a report that is regarding, I have a report that is my own that I present to the committee with recommendations. And those recommendations may be of discussions that may be in the year, and may also be recommendations in terms of remedial action. Now the committee deliberates on the report, it poses questions to me, and makes its own decisions. So at the end of the process, you have a report of the commission. You also have a report of the committee, which is tabled for adoption in the House. So that's what the process is. I don't know if that clarifies the question or if it's where he has it.
The commission has a lot of time.
I think this one of the commissioner is something that we also as the municipalities will need to get an assistance on, because most of the time our offices are not capacitated enough, which means the accounting officer who's the manager, he's the one who acts as someone who's senior in officials to advise the council. And most of the time, you find someone who may think independent, being someone who's been a consultant to the very particular municipality, because they're not how can you deem someone to be independent into the particular aspect on whether the very particular, because in some instances, the very same particular manager can get someone who subordinates to him to come to this particular committee.
Chairperson, I think Dr. Nkidima has responded to the question. It's understandable, but it does in some way raise a challenge which I need to understand how, in practical terms, it should be handled. Because the report of the commissioner, intercity commissioner, which still has got to be subjected to approval of the ethics committee, it may result in a situation where there are two contradictory reports, which would be verbal of the commissioner and of the ethics committee. I think to understand in this particular case, I do not know if there has been a incident of that nature to help the legislature how they would have handled it. But what then, in that situation, should be the case? Which one should supersede the other?
No, not.
This is where I wanted to propose for consideration that it should not be allowed that there should be two reports. Otherwise, it is too much of a repetition. I take it that the establishment of the Integrity Commissioner is to give to someone who has expertise to on behalf of the community, committee. After he has done that, he should bind to...
There's no way you can allow one in the group. Zero, one answer. On the other, you must try and ensure that the committee speaks, which is one of your reasons. The committee must speak with one hand. Yeah, I must try the mechanism of ensuring that happens.
So it should not be two reports going to
library.
Only one report must be.
No, the recommendation of course there is going to be the mechanism commission. But the committee has made this card and arrive at its own conclusion.
I think I think the important thing is that when the COVID reports to the House, there is a challenge to the COVID that they have applied themselves to this. In other words, there's a sole reason why it is here. So for me, it strengthens ethics rather than a way of you have to be friends with it because an individual cannot be stopped, including the integrity commissioner. That's why the commission is there. The integrity commissioner does not have so
perspective in the area and wider ethics and where political process is involved. So as long as there is, you know, for me, reason evidence and transparency in the process that it must be held, I think the interest of ethics are set rather than the opposite of saying that the committee investigates and reports to the House without an independent view is also effective, but it has also downfall in that the independence may be challenged, you know, in certain circumstances. There is no identification of the House, but there are codes of conduct, there are rules, there are procedures, but you know, none of them can really say
Say the problem is when both the reports are the ones that go through the legislative one report. It's if it is both of the commissioner and the ethics committee that go and serve there. It should be one report.
How do you do that? You take fine or you take check? those that you know, they are most importantly key. Now, you rate them up to 100%. The other one, maybe, let me give you an example because I was just noting something down here. The other one, let's say, KPD1 is the related employment outside parliament, which is about 50%. The other KPD2, they are saying maybe it's a sponsorship 20%. And then you go there with, as you shall have agreed. Now, when you end their talking, they will give you 100%. After that, then they're going to be able to rate them. If you never comply with one of the five or one of the chosen 10, then this is the rating that you are going to get. Then when you throw all the numbers into the calculator that we've been generated, then it tells it automatically, it gives you the graph. So say, we have done it well, then we have done it not well, and so forth. That's what Mpumalanga is currently alluded to in this regard. But if it's too difficult, we'll be able to include this and test it, correct it, and send it over you. So if you are committed or with your team, test it, find it if it's correct. If not correct, so in our workshop, your class will say, this will never work. And I can promise you, it's right, because it is working. Chairperson, I thank you.
Chair, thanks so much. From our side, to really believe that inputs that we have just alluded on earlier of taking it is very much more serious rather than really come and tick the box where the disclosure of the interest has been done in order to satisfy the annual audit. Seemingly we are not really up to scratch. So we need really to get deeper to safeguard the integrity of this public office. through the issue of the attendance of any work that you supposed to do of the counselor, the board meetings, public meetings, IDP and budget, and also the consultations in regards to the bylaws, respectively. We need really to take it as a very, very critical work that's supposed really to give us a reward of ensuring that our communities are united in that kind of regard. But over and above, the issue in regards to rules and ethics, generally, like I alluded earlier on to say, some of our councils, they adopt the dress code and it's enforceable by very same speaker's office, and to a certain extent to those particular committees, this ethics and rules committee that exist to any, but it's also a cardinal importance that all those particular policies, the code of conduct of the councils, every one of Assistance Act and the Standing Rules and Orders, also the dress code should really be taken as a comprehensive as the policies that should be looked after by this Rules and Ethics Committee. Last point is that also on the basis of the capacity of this particular committee, we need to really take it into account. Like we took an account of the MPEC offices that we have provided with some capacity to a certain extent to ensure that particular committee runs effectively as expected. Those would really be the input from us today. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The legislation, the provincial is Northwest. This outline the what is happening in the Northwest, and in that it shows that Northwest legislators are aware that things cannot be the same all the time. They should keep on rewriting these things according to the dynamics of life. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think some of the issues I've raised it in, and also with the speaker has raised some issues, and I think what we need to do is the Northern Cape listening. Let me comment the presenters. Really, it's a our province is a budget for the ethics committee. So we don't have budget to run the ethics committee properly. And with the result, with the non-existence of budget, we can't do proper networking and conduct some workshops. But what is key that we realize as an Northern Cape delegation here today is that we are in different need of workshops, especially on the district level, to bring our municipalities also on board. We need that, and then also a workshop on ethics, and which we see the role that Gauteng, Dokrel, Kitna can come and play in the support with the establishment and how to go about these ethics forums and the three ethics forums at the district level. And then we also, as discussed the issue there, we also need to sort out the role of the officials and the politicians on the district and municipality level, that who will then be in control of those ethics committee. And we do understand that at the end of the day, whether the independent person will come with a report, it still has to go to the ethics committee, and one report will be formulated out of that, which will be tabled in the house. And then I think we also came from maybe have some international exposure, and I also mentioned it once to our ethics committee, that we also need to have some of Canada's experience, but that is that we need to get first budget in place, and I think even on the district and the local municipality level. Chairman, I think the other things I perceive already. Thanks.
Chairperson, I think maybe we should first start by saying this exercise this morning or today was not in vain. It has opened us, in particular those of us who come from this area of government at the local level. It has given us that exposure and raised to us the need to, if not establish full-fledged ethics committees, but have some way of ensuring that there is due compliance to the code of conduct, and it is seen to be maintained and in a very regular way, because sometimes we only want to end by submission of declaration forms, but not educating politicians on what and how to correctly fill or complete those forms. I think the offices of the speakers will have to deal with that matter. I realize that the invitation was for municipalities to the district speakers in the meeting. So we will have to go back and feedback the local speakers or speakers of local municipalities so that we perform better on this specific area. Maybe where possible, we may invite presentations from like the housing integrity commissioner. from the National Assembly, so that it's not only us at the district level, it will reach to other local authorities. Thank you very much.
Okay, echoing what the DTC speaker has emphasized, but one would also have to commend the issue with the chairman in relation to giving the custom, our customers to be viewed as our kings. To say, I think each and every time it's giving us as speakers an indication that once some perceptions have been raised, the one whom those perceptions have been taken to must be cleared on time, because I think this particular committee view us not to purify any person, but just to clear up the moisture that is coming out of the state, because I think this will assist us on instilling the confidence into the government. Thank you.
Thanks. The recommendation would really be each free office would really found IC to visit also our provinces through the Eastern kind of activities. And Latino also would really be of cardinal importance to strengthen his public office, particularly of the councillors. That would really take us one way step forward to ensure that we preserve the culture of integrity and ethics and ethical behavior within ourselves. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Chair. I would like to support what you said. I think it would be best for us to get support from our politicians to coordinate that together, so that as districts and as soon as we are ready, we can then be able to ensure that local municipalities are correctly assisted. But if we can, from this workshop, right away start call local municipalities in the process for a good cause, we may then start confuse those particular local municipalities. So it is very, the support is, can we then agree that at national level, at your level, you coordinate the meeting for provinces and other than being responsible to provinces?
I find it difficult to comment now because there are some issues that I'm having in my head. So I want to wait for the chairperson to summarize. Maybe if those particular issues that I have in my head have not been raised, then can I request the chairperson to allow me? Okay. 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 Thank you, Chairman. Now, what I wanted to say, Chairman, is that there has been recommendations made by various speakers from the Victoria. And I wanted to find out as to what is the position of the Chairman regarding those particular recommendations that were made today. I mean, like, for instance, point number one that was raised by Mpumalanga, the issue of the budget, point number two that was made by the Northwest, the rotation of the National Assembly towards the province, incapacitating the forums, and the and those things. So that if those are the areas that would prefer that the chair then some kind of itemized areas that he concedes, that he concedes in. Thank you.
Beyond just saying these are the problems, don't theorize about them, but begin to say
These are simple practical steps that need to be taken to ensure that the issues are okay? For instance, I mean, we have an ethics committee that has to meet. If you have the ethics committee, doesn't meet in the province, then the problem. If you don't insist to discuss the issues, then there's a problem. You see what I mean. So there must be a sense of a plan about the work that we do. It's logical, not it's logical. Plan strategies require those kinds of things. Make all the challenges, say what needs to be done. We seem to have with the question of implementation. Because many of the solutions that face us are living in the field. In other words, the most difficult aspect is the third point that we the doing. That's the most complex. Because as you do, you learn a bit more. Anything. Practice is the most complex. And that's where we want to go. And we'll come back to the other questions about something that is done by the national community. Then there's an issue that I think all of us will be agreeing on. And that's the question of alignment. That they have received reports. There's some work happening there, some little work happening there, lack of commissions and so on elsewhere. What is very clear that what we're at a different level of we need to find a way of aligning the work or taking it to hand. For instance, I mean some provinces, some municipalities, they don't even have a problem. There's no like code of conduct document. It doesn't exist. It exists in other. If you have to ask the question, when there's a breach, what happens? The code answers. Just imagine and some people don't have even a code. They don't have the structure, and so on. So we need to overcome that gap. Okay? But I was saying that in a view, you think that when it's the district board like this, it's a very good one. But what is that problem? What are the details of that? So we need to bridge that gap. We must have a code that every board subscribes to. Not some fashion in some municipality. Some group with some problem, but we must agree on this is the whole, and this we need to do going on. And there's also another strategy that stands around the target documents. You may have its own problems and so on, but as we move into the future, we need to strengthen it and so on. And all of us speak with one voice. In any way, some of the labor, of course, our written legislation. The law does not allow certain things. For instance, you can't see the decision, even though you have a mayor and they advance training or run the allocation of tenders. But yes, the company that simply not get all the tenders. You see what I mean? So the law does not allow certain things already, the law says. This and that is legal. So sometimes we may even start. But remember, the issue of ethics committees and related work and so on is not very interesting because we want to convict someone. We want to condemn someone. Or we are fighting with someone. The code is and the one that's being done, is being done collaboratively. In a way that seeks to ensure that everybody works together in the same kind of direction. I'm not far from you. website, in the ethics committee, what that is seen as a punishment or punitive instrument, if you want to see it. But the ethics committee must be seen as a structure and an instrument that is being utilized to help members. In Parliament, members in the provincial legislature, councillors, and responsible them to comply, assist people to do the right thing, and work together with them, not against them. That's the So, intellectual alignment. The last point that I want to raise is that there's this idea of a forum that we need to meet and share ideas. I think that in order that everyone not basically that, it's just that the people will keep us lacking. They need to be the provinces. We had initially intended to do that. That was our point. We had to go to provinces. But then it was seen as the less expensive means is to get people to come to Panama. I tried to get it done this way. But this does not dismiss the idea that we need to show further consolidation. And one way of doing that is to visit the provinces. If it can be done, it can be easy to do too quantity, specific quantity. To go to one province. We can do the same thing like that. We have two provinces and the interactive to engage in that. So going to provinces is one way of taking the work forward. But in the meantime, we're saying that the work that's going on in districts and in provinces and so on must be reinforced. That work must go on, but that's not stop. And the visit, therefore, from national resistance, putting forces where that is ongoing on in the province. There was a rotation of meetings to provinces. I think that has been raised this idea. But the other idea is the suggestion that government teaching. Not only, but also other people at national level must be encouraged and must be requested to make available their time. But that is important for the provincial legislation. But what is happening is struggle with them. At least we say, you are requesting management, please make this time available to us. And maybe the point that one is making for you. If we look at ethics committee as a mere technical matter, we won't get it. So what was going to happen is that we're just going to get people forms and filling in that committee. But if we see it as a broader question, and as something linked to the destiny of this country and its people, we'll look at the matter slightly. And the effort that we put into it to be a bit more. So it's not just a very difficult time. Any comments? And it's close. Thank you very much for coming. We really appreciate it. And we will endeavor to ensure that we take it further. And maybe just to request a quick application once more to the staff. Because we are not just going to forget about it. They really took a lot of work to ensure that this meeting is successful. to encourage them to do even more work in I'm going to go to the question. So before you leave, you can take that something to eat.